Welcome to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministries. Our goal is to have you totally debt-free. We accomplish this through our 9-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You can preview the Bible study and take a look at the 9 topics that are covered over the 9 weeks by going to compasscatholic.org. Click on Books and Studies and take a look at that first one that pops up. It's called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. Preview it. Take a look at the 9 topics that are discussed over those 9 weeks. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, join me today. And John, I want to start off the show with a very deep question. What do you think people want from life?
If people knew the answer to this question, their personal lives would be much simpler. Their family lives would be simpler and be less stressful. And their finances would be easier and they'd be able to save more money. You know, advertisers would have to dream up entirely new strategies in order to market all of their products. We're going to tell you what it is, but you got to wait.
Well, you're going to tell me what it is, but you're not going to tell me what it is.
I'm not going to tell you right now.
All right.
You know, since we went through our catharsis 30 years ago, we've watched many families struggle with their finances and as a result of their finances, with their family relationships, and really just life in general.
So why do you think so many people are struggling?
Most people would say that they want to be able to earn enough money to be happy.
Okay, so what's enough money? Define enough.
Enough. In reality, it really doesn't make any difference because money doesn't create happiness. You know, once you've earned your dream salary, whatever that number is, it's not enough because your dreams have changed.
I remember when we were first married, all we wanted was $50 more a month.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's come and gone several times.
In multiples of 50.
And it just seems like every time you get that next bump in your salary, your lifestyle inflates.
Yes.
And it just gets absorbed.
Yes. Yeah. And as soon, you know, within a month or 2 months or 3 months, now you need more money. And by the time that you've reached your goal, well, the goal has changed. The old goal is, that's passé. Now we got this new big goal. And, you know, it's a wild goose chase of goals. Evelyn, you know that money is only a tool that, you know, it can provide family vacations or nice homes and lots of trinkets. But some people would say they want to have purpose in their life.
So that's their goal, is to have a purpose in life.
Yeah. But again, I've got to ask the question, what does that mean? What does having a purpose in life mean? You know, a purpose is just a temporary situation. Maybe your purpose right now in your life is to raise good kids. Or maybe it's to be a good provider. Or to be a good employee. Those purposes are all good, but they don't last a lifetime. They're all temporary. You know, as we've struggled with our own lives, we've voiced all of these feelings and desires. We've had long discussions about them. But you know, I recently read an article by Peter Dunn in the USA Today, and he was saying that the real thing that people are searching for is self-control. He said people want to be in charge. And if they've got self-control, then they are in charge. And he says, do you know why you buy things you objectively can't afford? Because you want to feel like you're in control of a situation, but you're really not in control. I am in charge, your credit card screams, is what Peter said. But, you know, you're not in charge if you don't have self-control. And he makes the claim that self-control is a learned behavior. I think you would agree with that, wouldn't you?
I think a lot of things in life are a learned behavior, but self-control is something you definitely have to practice over and over and over again in different areas. And you can use self-control from different areas of your life to control your finances. So if you've ever quit smoking, then you can use that as a building block upon which you can straighten out your finances. Or if you've ever taken control of your fitness routine and lost weight or gotten more fit, that can be a stepping stone to controlling your finances. So the parallels between health and wellness are really very much alike.
You know, he also makes another claim that wealth doesn't really matter.
I totally agree with that, because we all know people that are wealthy that are not happy and people that are very poor that are very happy.
Well, and just because they've got wealth or they don't have wealth doesn't mean that they have self-control. They're not in control of their destiny.
Nobody's in control of their destiny.
Even people who seem like they got all the money in the world don't necessarily drink from that fountain of self-control. And self-control has nothing to do with wealth. That's why you can relish financial self-control, but you don't have great wealth. You don't have a lot of money.
You don't have to have a lot of money. What you have to have is the need not to have a lot of money. You have to be in control of where you are at that point in time.
Yes, absolutely.
We're working with a couple right now that makes a gracious plenty of money, and they really don't have any savings, and their credit card debt is out of sight, but yet they're on the bubble of being financially solvent because they're not careful with what they spend.
Yes, absolutely. You know, whether you're a brain surgeon or a lawyer or a professional athlete or a salesperson, a CEO, it really doesn't make any difference. You know, if they find self-control, there's still going to be an emptiness that's not filled up by stuff. You know, cashmere scarves, luxury cars, you know, whatever material possessions they think that allows them to be a shot caller, right?
Yep. It doesn't matter how much material stuff you have. If you're not happy, you're not happy.
Self-control takes an intentional effort. It has to be learned. It's intentional. But is it worth it? Is that what's going to give them a meaning to their life?
Well, in our case, building self-control has been worth it because we've been able to straighten out our finances, and our marriage is much stronger once we put an area or a little fence of self-control around our spending and how we managed our money.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in his situation, he says he feels good about himself when instead of getting a burger and fries, he orders something that's more healthful, a salad, for example.
The green stuff is always more healthy, right?
Well, I don't know about that. But that can carry over into your financial life. If you get a high because you've made good food choices and you like that feeling of the success of being self-controlled and making good choices, then when you transfer that to your financial aspects, you know, maybe that'll help you be more self-controlled, have more discipline with your finances.
You know, it's a good point, John, because self-control is just a process. It takes one little step at a time in order to build that self-control and continue living it day after day after day.
Yeah, you've got to put your emotions away. You've got to ignore your account values. You've got to forget about what all the advertisers are saying, that all that consumerism that's being spewed over the airwaves and in magazines and on newsprint. Persistent here is easier said than actually doing it. Your emotions alone are enough to totally destroy everything you've tried to accomplish.
Get yourself under control, right?
Exactly, exactly. Peter, in his article, challenges people to give it a shot. Choose a goal with a financial price tag equal to 2 months' income. And, you know, maybe ideally your goal would be to pay down your debt.
So you'd want to pay down your debt by 2 months' income.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You set money aside for the future, or maybe you fund some practical solution to a major problem. Whatever it is, pick a goal and then dedicate, say, 10% of your paycheck to that goal. And, you know, you can tolerate that with a few small adjustments. Could you handle 10% of your paycheck going towards something for 20 months? Or could you handle 20% of your paycheck going for 10 months? You know, it's a balancing act of how much you can take on for a short period of time.
You know, I think it's all a trade-off, because once you start down that path and you get some success, then you're more inclined to stay on that path and start building on that success instead of just going back to where you were 10 or 20 months ago.
Well, and once you start to have success, then you'll take a look at what your current habits are, and you would be, I don't say obliged, but you would probably want to make changes in what you're doing.
So that you're building on that success.
Yeah. You've seen what you've done with this acts of self-control, and so now you're going to apply that to maybe some of the other things in your life. That's his end all. He says, if you can be self-controlled, then, you know, you've got what it takes to be where you want to be.
Well, you said that was his end all, so it sounds like your end all is in a different place.
Well, it is. It is. You know, we've struggled for a long time, and I believe that what Peter had to say, he was on the right track, but I really think that he stopped one step short of the final answer. And self-control is just a major strategic piece to the puzzle.
But it doesn't give you the whole picture.
It doesn't give you the whole picture. Listen to this verse from Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I accumulated much more than all others before me in Jerusalem. My wisdom too stayed with me. Nothing that my eyes desired did I deny them, nor did I deprive myself of any joy. Rather, my heart rejoiced in the fruit of all my toil. This was my share for all my toil. But when I turned to all the works that my hands had wrought, and to the fruit of the toil for which I had toiled so much, see, all was vanity and a chase after the wind. There is no profit under the sun. You know, the answer that everybody is looking for, Solomon too, is contentment.
Something that we have learned working with individuals on their financial situation is those that get the principle of being content with what they have achieve their goal of removing their debt that they've accumulated a little quicker. And remember, it really doesn't matter what your debt situation may be, whether you have a very small balance or you're carrying something much larger. Start focusing today on being content. Before you take out the credit card, I ask you to do one thing. Ask yourself, do I really need this? One thing my wife and I do is we delay by 48 hours making any decision on any purchase just to make sure that what we're about to purchase we really need. So Evelyn, to be content, you have to have self-control, restraint, whatever word you want to attach to contentment. But I know there are many verses in the Bible dealing with this word. Can you just share one related to contentment?
You know, there's a great verse from Timothy, and it's in chapter 6, verse 1 Timothy. It's in chapter 6, verse 8, and it says, if we have food and clothing, we shall be content with that. And so many times our culture makes that if we have food and clothing and the latest car and the newest tech toys and all the latest fashions and the biggest house, blah, 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 yeah, we'll be content.
Yes.
But that's not what the Bible teaches.
Absolutely.
Now, you two talk about this, I forget how many years ago, where you were struggling financially. And how long did it take for you to realize the importance of contentment? And how long did it take you to be content? I mean, was it a gradual change?
Well, yeah, it was definitely gradual. I think as I started playing with my spreadsheet, when you have to die spreadsheet, so how long is my money going to last? And I realized that even if the market tanked, if we really cut back, we put in our crisis budget, that we could still get by. We wouldn't go broke. We wouldn't be eating cat food or dog food or whatever. I realized then that I think that we have reached a point where we don't need to accumulate a whole lot more. Evelyn wasn't quite so sure.
Well, I wasn't so sure that our money would last long enough, but I think your conversion with contentment came a long time before that. I think your version with contentment came when you first were exposed to these biblical principles and you changed from wanting to acquire everything that you saw to being a good steward. I think that was more of your contentment.
Well, it was definitely part of the process of learning to be content. I absolutely agree with you. But I think that I reached that, you know, am I 25% content or 50% content or 75% content or 100% content? I think I reached 100% when I realized that we really didn't have a need to accumulate more.
Well, that happens when you get to a certain age and you start giving everything away because you realize you don't really need all that stuff that you spent the first how many years of your life accumulating stuff. You've gotten to that point too, haven't you, Steve?
Yes, but let's not take it off of you. I want to go back to you guys. I've heard you talk about the house that you had built in Raleigh.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, and I mean, obviously you weren't content because you built a bigger home.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. And, you know, the strange thing about that house, we had some friends who also built a house about the same time. Actually, I think they finished theirs probably before we finished ours. And we were doing some of the right things. In other words, we bought the land and paid for it before we did anything else. And then we negotiated an unbelievable contract. But it doesn't matter how good your contract is if you don't have any income coming in. It still becomes an overwhelming debt, which it eventually did. And that house was an embarrassment, to be perfectly honest.
Embarrassment meaning?
Well, when you drove up the driveway to this house, you're driving through the trees. It's on a 2.5-acre lot. And you drove in at the basement level. So the first thing you see is three stories of brick. That was our house. One story of basement, mm-hmm. and then a two-story house. Well, it was just super imposing. And it looked like it was way beyond our means.
It was.
Well, it was at that point in time. Now, if we still had the income coming in that we had, if I hadn't quit my job, you know, to start this new company, it wouldn't have been an issue.
But, John, let me ask you, knowing what you know now, even if the income was the same, and it was coming in, would you have built that size home? I mean, were you not content in the home you had previously?
We were influenced by our friends.
Yeah. Okay, so that's...
Yeah, we were keeping up with the Joneses.
And that is quite normal.
Yeah. It was playing the game that everybody plays. Well, my friend's got a bigger house, so we should have a bigger house.
No, yeah. I mean, taking it to today, look at the gadgets that are out there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have the latest, the best, the fastest.
I wouldn't do that same thing today, but the house I'm in today actually costs more than that house did.
Well, that's just because right. It was so much later.
Yeah, but would I go back and buy that house today? I really like that house, though.
No, I wouldn't.
Go visit.
No, we don't need a house that big.
But it's like with anything, so many things that I'll take it myself that I have purchased where years later I think about it and I'm going, gee, if I would only have that money today and not have spent it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that taking a week to really... if you're thinking about something, take a week to really decide, do I really need that?
Well, that's why we recommend that wish list where you write the thing down, get three prices, and wait 30 days before you buy it. And
then 90
still,
days. 90
oh, is it
90 days? Yeah.
Wait 90 days before you buy it. I never put anything on my list, so I don't know how long you're supposed to wait.
But contentment is tough.
It is.
It really
is.
It's a struggle.
If nobody around you is practicing contentment, and we certainly lived in an area when we were in North Carolina where everybody was trying to keep up with everybody else.
Well, and even we were even in that kind of a situation when we moved to Atlanta, when we left Orlando because of job transfers to go to Atlanta. The neighborhood we were in was drastically keeping up with the Joneses kind of a neighborhood.
Yeah. And I don't know how you know that stuff before you buy in a place.
I mean, you can't really
tell what your neighbors are like before you move in.
You know, people were buying houses and they couldn't afford furniture. And you'd look in the front window because they didn't have any drapes either. And it'd be bare rooms.
They had the big house.
They have a big house. That's true.
See, I've tried to use contentment on Audrey that I wasn't content being skinny. Okay,
and
bad joke.
How did that work for you?
Hey.
So, You're right, Evelyn. It was a process, and once once we were here, and I started to learn the spiritual aspects of handling your finances, then I did start to change. But I still had that desire to accumulate because I wanted to make sure we had enough to provide to the end of our life, whenever that happens. But once I realized that we were there, then I was hit with a contentment. And I just had to prove that to you.
Well, it wasn't that I wasn't content, but I am the wife, so I'm supposed to worry about things. So I was worried about the fact that we would have enough money to live on. But I was content with what we had. I mean, I didn't want anything else.
Yeah.
But I want to be clear here for our listeners that contentment is not just rolling over and saying, okay, God, do with me what you will. Contentment is accepting where God has you at this point in your life and knowing that that's exactly where you're supposed to be, whether it's a good situation or a bad situation. And when that changes, accepting that situation. But you're trying to better yourself the whole time.
Okay, as you're working with individuals or couples, how do you convey that message? How do you get them to change a bad habit?
What we try to do is to first ask them what their goals are. You know, do they want to save for college? Do they want to pay off debt? Do they want to pay off the house? Are they saving for retirement? And have them list three or four goals. And then the whole conversation centers around goals. Now, when you bought that new car, is that helping you get your goal of reaching retirement at age 40?
Right.
So
right.
It gets back to what they said their goals were versus how they're acting.
And you start talking to them about the tactics of reaching contentment, like having self-control, of managing your money based on a spending plan, you know, those types of things that are important to reaching that ultimate, I don't know, it's not a destination, what do you call it?
It's a goal.
The ultimate goal of contentment.
You know, and so many times, in my opinion, a lot of parents are influenced by their children. You know, the overspending comes because of trying to keep their children happy. And let's face it, kids are never going to be content with anything because they're seeing the TV, they're seeing their friends, they're out there being influenced by the culture. So it's a conscious effort to teach your kids how to be content. And that's difficult.
Well, that's difficult. But we put so much, responsibility on the kids. You watch any of these home improvement shows and how many people are going through a new house. I heard it last night on the TV. Oh, the kids wouldn't like that decor at all.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, they're kids, aren't they?
They don't get a choice.
They don't get a choice. That's right.
Or the kids today have to have their own bedrooms. I know I shared a bedroom my whole life with my sister. I never had my own bedroom.
Right, right. My sisters did the same thing.
Perfectly happy.
Yeah.
I survived.
You know, I think that the key ingredient here, the key thing that everybody is struggling for in their lives, the thing that they want to accomplish is contentment. And all these other things that they think that they want to have, great amount of finances, nice cars, big houses, you know, beautiful this and that, those aren't the important things. It's when you can be content, like you said, Evelyn, you can be content with the stuff you have and the way you have it and what you can do with it.
I heard a good quote the other day. It said, if you're not content with what you have, you'll never be content with what you get.
Yeah.
So that speaks volumes, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a great quote from Philippians chapter 4. Paul is writing from prison, and he's saying, I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well fed and going hungry, of having plenty and being in need. You know, I think that the answer that everybody's looking for is the same thing that Peter identified. It's contentment, or Paul identified. It's contentment. And, you know, how great a person was Paul, an apostle, a disciple, you know, he wrote half of the New Testament approximately. He had to learn to be content. And that's important for us. We also have to learn to be content.
It's not going to happen overnight. It's a step-by-step process.
You know, if you take your eyes off the worldly treasures, away from riches, fame, and fortune, you too can learn to be content. It will take self-control, but that's not the ultimate objective. The ultimate goal is contentment. And remember, it's not about the money.
It's about the change.
The change of your heart.
So the original question that we threw out there at the start of today's show is, what do people really want from their financial lives? And as John said a few minutes ago, no matter what the goal is, it all begins with contentment. Before we get out of here, we want to answer a question from one of our listeners. A very interesting question. It says, John and Evelyn, should we share household finances with our teenage sons, or is it best to keep that private? We do have some challenges right now, and I don't want to worry them or place any stress on them.
You know, I think anytime you can share whatever is appropriate with teenagers and even younger children as far as household finances, it's a good learning tool for them. I wouldn't give them all the ugly details if you're in a lot of financial trouble, but I would tell them that you've got debt you need to pay off, or you're trying to save for a certain thing, and just give them the high level view of what you're trying to do. And I think you'll be surprised how much they'll buckle down and help.
I would also, you know, how much you tell them depends on how old they are and how mature they are, and their ability to maintain confidentiality. Steve Harvey is making a career out of kids saying the craziest things on the TV. Well, they're only repeating what they hear from home. As long as your children are mature and can handle the information you're going to give them, then I think it's a good idea.
If you ever have a question for John and Evelyn, maybe a financial situation that you find yourself in, by all means, email John and Evelyn at ask@compasscatholic.org. Thank you so much for listening. We post a new podcast each and every Wednesday. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministries.